Moto Casino is pure American energy. Born in the USA and with the same 1776 spirit that built this country. Moto, America's social casino, is celebrating that freedom with a 1 million sweeps coin prize giveaway. One lucky American is going to win 1 million sweeps coins. So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Saving money on your next project now at Menards. Menards is the leading supplier of quality roof and floor trusses. Choose from our large selection of residential and post-frame trusses or design custom trusses specifically for your project. Get started on your building project today in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, view our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Samuel Bateman thought the two outsiders at his table were gonna make him famous. He had no idea Christine Marie had fallen for a false prophet once herself and could read every move he was making the second he made it. Christine is the woman at the center of the Netflix documentary, Trust Me, the False Prophet. She and her husband, Tolga, moved to Short Creek along the Utah-Arizona border to make a different film. Then Bateman stepped out of the wreckage Warren Jeffs left behind, declared himself the new prophet, started taking spiritual wives, some of them children, and let two outsiders with cameras into his house. It cost him 50 years in federal prison. This first segment is about how she got in, the cover story, the double life, the moment filmmaker quietly became mole. She joins myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, to discuss her work in Short Creek and the work you saw in the Netflix documentary, Trust Me, the False Prophet. Christine, let's start with this. You and Tolga came to Short Creek for something else entirely. You didn't necessarily show up there expecting to meet Samuel Bateman, not to chase a man like that. Let's back up before Sam even enters the picture. What's your original project? What's your original inspiration to go to Short Creek before Sam even enters your life? What's your thoughts on what the next 5 to 10 years are going to look like for you before Sam?
Interesting question, because we were living in Las Vegas. I was finishing my PhD, so I was at the point where I was working on my dissertation research and I could live wherever I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to move out of Las Vegas and help the people from Short Creek, believing that all of them were victims of some kind and some kind of religious trauma. And because I had experience with that and developed an expertise in that, I thought, you know, let me go and help the people who've left the FLDS understand what happened to them. And then things unfolded from there.
Did you go into that understanding how difficult it might be to reach someone who has gone through that? I know, obviously, you've had your own experiences, and you are so uniquely qualified for everything that you did and everything that you went through. But having that experience for oneself and making those own realizations are very different than helping others necessarily get to that point. What kind of wall did you face, or what kind of hill did you climb? Was it as steep as you expected?
Oh my goodness. It was more complicated than I imagined, because the FLDS at this time were very reclusive. Mm-hmm. They would, you know, they were encouraged not to talk, even talk to outsiders. So I didn't expect that I would ever really have any FLDS friends. I was focusing on the ex-FLDS. Mm-hmm. But even then, they have this in-group, out-group bias that's been ingrained in them from birth. You know, either you're a member or you're a non-member, you're from a high-status family or a low-status family. I mean, this us versus them thinking was very strong. So even though I thought I will help, I will do my best to try to help the ex-FLDS, I was still an outsider to them. So that was tough, and it took a lot for me to have any breakthrough at all.
What is it like there in Short Creek? I mean, you came in as a complete outsider. Is it, I mean, as an outsider coming into a very close-knit community, you had to have stood out like a sore thumb, I would think. I mean, tell me about that, and how long were you trying to become part of the fabric of this community that is in a bit of chaos at the moment, prior to meeting Sam?
Well, I started trying to build trust with the community actually the year before I moved there in 2015. And what I did was I decided that since the FLDS don't have Christmas, and since Warren Jeffs had apparently banned all the toys, now that there was a group of ex-FLDS, I needed to teach him about Christmas.
The Burgermeister, Meister Burger.
oh my goodness. It was like I was going to be the antidote to the Grinch who stole Christmas.
Yes.
And I had this alter ego, you know, as Mrs. Gingerbread, which you might have seen a little clip of me as a ventriloquist. Okay. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm gonna do my puppets and bring Christmas to these children that don't even know about Christmas. So that my first foray into gaining trust in the community happened the year before I moved there. And we brought in semi-truckloads of toys, and we had this big dinner called the First Christmas, where we explained what the Christmas tree is for and what candy canes represent and all this stuff. So that was number one. So that was just trying to earn the trust of the ex-FLDS. And that was a lot of fun. Then my husband and I noticed some evictions going on and started realizing that something didn't feel right, the way they were being handled. And we took photos and we shared them on Facebook, like, what in the heck is going on here? And then that created sort of a World War III among the FLDS, ex-FLDS. Mm-hmm. And because they just thought, as outsiders, we can't possibly know like the ins and outs of why people were being evicted that way. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know that we had been educated on it and we knew the other side. So we met some people, two FLDS ladies at a gas station nearby, and I just went up to them and said, you know, I'm so sorry for what you're going through. And they were like, what are we going through? We're going through a lot, but which thing are you talking about? And I told them about the pictures on Facebook. Uh-huh. and the insane response. I mean, the outside world was in agreement with us, but the people from the town weren't happy that we were, you know, sharing these photos, and we had permission of everybody in the photos to share them. So go ahead.
You were trying to advocate for them.
I was,
you know, so what were they upset about when they're pushing back? What is the pushback about?
Well, the ex-FLDS were getting the properties that were being evicted. So the FLDS were being evicted. The ex-FLDS were getting those properties. So for us to be saying, hey, these evictions, this seems wrong. And there's a lot more to it. Mm-hmm. It just created trouble among the people who were going to benefit by getting those properties.
Okay.
So, but there was also a large sector of town that respected us for what we were doing because they agreed. So you know, we were kind of in the middle, but we didn't know any FLDS. So we were advocating for the FLDS without even knowing any of them, just saying, this doesn't seem right. So when we met these two ladies at the gas station, they were amazed. And that was like, why are these outsiders defending us? You know, and that was the beginning of us gaining trust in the FLDS long before we met Sam Bateman. I mean, about, I think we met Sam maybe 9 months after we moved there.
So, Christina, what I'm really curious about is you are doing such an incredible job with behaviors of trust, as I define them, as open, honest communication, transparency, and vulnerability, and doing the number one thing we did in the spy recruiting world is identifying a critical life challenge that someone has and being a resource for them solving it. And so that was so intuitive to you, and I think it's one of the greatest reasons why you're so successful with the people's lives that you touch. But I'm also curious, the title of the show is Trust Me, Your Daughter's all about Trust Me, her podcast. Define trust. What does trust mean to you? How do you define it?
I think it is when you know you can count on someone to be acting in integrity and have your best interest at heart. It's the, I don't even know how much truth is important in trust, because when I think about my experience, the truth could be evaluated different ways. Yeah. I was being deceptive by acting as if I was okay with the things that Sam was doing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the bigger issue was that the real truth, they didn't know. And right. If I wanted them to get to the truth, I had to get Sam out of the picture, no matter what it took.
And you are one of the things I like defining trust as is, like you said, it not necessarily have to be truth, especially in situations where you're saving lives, but it's really predictable behavior. And you were so consistent, and you started way before the meeting. Was this part of your plan or just who you were about being that person that could be this life-saving person without even inflicting yourself? You were invited in, and so those are the greatest relationships that people see from that opposite side is someone that they can invite in to be that resource when they need it, unobtrusively, and you were so consistent with your delivery. Was that part of it, or planned, not planned, or just rolled with it?
It wasn't planned. It was just an empathetic instinct. These people need help, and I had an advantage because I was not ex-FLDS. See, the town was primarily full of innies and outies. So like people who were still in the FLDS and people who were out. And then there was me and just a small few others. So here I was, a neutral person. So they could talk to me more easily than they could talk to a former member. I mean, the former members were called apostates. So they... talking to them was a no-no. So I knew I had this special opportunity, and I began offering services. Once they were evicted, they needed to find a place to live. How are they going to do that if they don't go on the internet? So I sat there for hours being the internet fingers for so many people. I mean, days, months, trying to help people find a place to live, trying to help people understand what a mortgage is. Some people didn't even know what that word was. Some people didn't have credit. I mean, I helped many people get their very first email, learn how to do the at sign. So I was there being of service just because they needed it. And I know it wasn't a plan at all.
Wow.
Bateman obviously becomes part of the picture here with folks. I mean, the folks that he, I don't know if the word is recruited or bamboozled or manipulated. There's so many words we could use for what he did. But the people that were coming into his fold were believing that he was speaking for Warren Jeffs, that he was part of that ecosystem. He's the next chapter, if you will, basically. The folks that were believing him, that were beginning to follow him and trust him, were those XFLDS at that point in time, or were they still FLDS and they just thought, oh, this is just the next natural evolution of our faith?
That's a great question. They were still FLDS. They still believed in Warren Jeffs, and Sam became an imposter, saying that he was like the new voice of Warren Jeffs and that Warren Jeffs had died and was speaking through him. So he took upon himself the mantle of being a prophet. That's why they believed in him. Mm-hmm. But only a few of the FLDS, only a small few, ended up falling for his scam. Mm-hmm. Most FLDS were like, no way. We're not having anything to do with you. We're not even letting you near our daughters. You know, and so he was not FLDS. He was an offshoot doing his own thing.
Were there any others trying to pull Sam's scheme? Or was it just, I mean, it seems if you're a very manipulative, evil human being, this is ripe hunting ground for doing this sort of thing. Are there other Batemans, or was there other Batemans running around, or was Bateman just kind of the lone wolf that was having access to all the sheep?
Oh, there were others, all right. When Warren Jeffs stopped communicating frequently, I mean, he hadn't communicated to the community in a number of years. So it was a ripe opportunity for wolves in sheep's clothing to come in and seize upon that. He was not the only one. I don't want to mention the names of the other ones, but we still have a worry that other ones will be coming forward as well.
Yeah, what was it about Sam? I mean, this guy had failed so completely in so many aspects of life. What was it that made him just the right person at the right time? Or was it not necessarily him, but those that were vulnerable to someone like him that made him more successful than any of these other people?
I think it was his narcissism. He had such nerve to claim that he was communicating directly with God. And then he would stay in character, and he would even do these actions with his body. Like he was like looking up, seeing angels, and he'd be like, he would go like this, and then he would act as if he just had an impression from God. And, you know, people weren't used to being bamboozled. They weren't used to being snowed like this. They didn't expect that somebody would have the nerve to be lying about something so important. I think it was their naivete held up against his predatorial instincts that gave him the advantage.
And the second part of that, and I'm sorry, Tony, I'll let you go after this. How did you do it? How were you? We talk about this all the time in our show and in my work in the Bureau. People have leakage. When there's an incongruence between what you feel and what's come out of your mouth, there's leakage because we have this abhorrent repulsion to what these people are doing, even though we know what to say, we know how we should be acting. But what made you so amazingly successful in this world with him and save people's lives was the fact that you were able to be congruent. You didn't have leakage. What was it that kept you from leaking your true feelings when Sam is spewing this complete nonsense? And have him, who is hyper, again, I'm curious, do you think he was hypersensitive and really good at reading people, or so bad that you're able to get away with it with him? Or were you just that awesome, which I think you were?
Oh, he was just so bad at it, clearly. I mean, he told Hogan and I he trusted us with his life. He trusted us with the media more than he trusted himself. That was in the doc.
Yeah.
So there was a little leakage. If you watch it again, you'll see that when I was in the car and Sam, you know, confessed the things that he made his girls do, and I asked how they felt. I said, are you okay? And he was saying, how did you feel? And they were saying things. And I said, trauma. And I was like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, you know, because of course those girls would be traumatized, but I could have blown it right there.
You redirected yourself. You redirected yourself so well. I mean, you saw it in real time. And so I think at this point, he had a positive confirmation bias with you because you're feeding that narcissism really well. And so at some point, and when was that point, do you think, where he actually shifted to a positive confirmation bias to you that allowed you to actually have moments like that where he would dismiss the teeny little blip you gave and just look at the redirect you were doing?
I think that Tolga was my secret weapon, because Tolga is, he's very charismatic and he's hilarious. He's hilarious, by the way. And he offers so much. If you're a narcissist looking for fame, then Tolga, I mean, has this incredible backstory of his own where, you know, he was a music producer and
yeah,
he won Song of the Year beating Janet Jackson. You know, I mean, he knows all these celebrities and such. And Sam was drunk on power and hungry for fame. So I think that all of Toga's connections made Sam see more of an advantage to trusting in us, because he thought he could use us. Also, I thought of one more thing. By this time, we had a certain status among the FLDS. And so we had a certain status among some of the FLDS. And I think he wanted us to kind of vouch him in, because they just thought he was a monster. And if he recruited us into his group or made us friendly to his group, then maybe we would speak well of him to the FLDS so he could find more women.
Yeah. And also get his music video before the Queen.
Excellent point.
Who needs TRL when you got the Queen? You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Exactly. There's more to come with Christine Marie. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss it. Christine Marie did something almost nobody who survives a cult ever does. She walked back into one on purpose with a plan and held the lie long enough to make sure the next girls didn't end up where she'd been. That takes a particular kind of strength, a particular kind of person. But getting inside Samuel Bateman's house was only the first wall. The second one was almost worse, because once Christine had the footage, once she had the man on tape, the evidence describing what he was doing in his own words, she walked it straight to local police, and the local police watched it, acted like they believed her, and did nothing for years. We're getting into the why of that in part two. Stay with us. Press subscribe so you don't miss it, and give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
All right. If you have checked out the new Netflix doc about Samuel Bateman and the FDLS cult, you're in for a good episode. Samuel Bateman was borrowing $20 originally, sleeping on couches. 3 years later, fathers were handing him their 9-year-old daughters, and businessmen were buying him Bentleys. The Netflix doc, Trust Me, The False Prophet, shows you what he built. It doesn't show you how the specific moves a man with nothing used to make 50 people hand over everything. What did he see in them that we couldn't see in themselves, that they couldn't see in themselves? That's the question that we are asking today as we get into that doc and the thinking of Bateman and the thinking of the FLDS members and how people get there. I think that's a big question so many have, is how did you even get here? How did you find yourself falling into this world this hard? Joining Robin Dreek and myself to discuss, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. Nightbird is her book. She is someone who has survived this type of extreme religiosity and is here to talk about it. And you have helped countless people sense with your own story. Siobhan, let's start with the doc here. You watch the doc, you see the parents educated enough to hold jobs, run businesses, raise families. They seem like fairly normal folks. And so you start talking about religion and giving their children to some guy that kind of came out of the woodwork, not at gunpoint, voluntarily. He's the prophet. What is it about someone like Bateman? What is it that he operates under that makes otherwise functional people do something as horrific as literally handing over their daughters to him?
Yeah. Yeah. This would not be a man. I don't think many of us would look at him and say, I want him as my baby daddy. All appearances, somebody that could have been framed a loser. But I think it was when he stepped into this, there was this cohesive group. They had lost contact for the most part with Warren Jeffs, their prophet. They came in with tremendous vulnerabilities and a lot of thinking errors and distorted belief systems. These were people who were needing a shepherd. They were needing guidance. And I didn't get the impression that Sam was a particularly bright person, but he was a highly manipulative person. And manipulative people are dangerous, even when they're not really bright. You know, when they're super bright, they run for office and get elected to high office just on virtue of being manipulative. But yeah, he knew how to use love bombing. He knew how to do this gradual takeover of their minds to position himself as a prophet, which essentially, in the way this worked, he was their God. And mm-hmm. they were trained that these young women, everything was about obedience. And this is what spirituality meant to them. You stay sweet, you stay subservient, you learn not to think, and you obey. And that was the way to heaven. And it just was this combination of people in this vulnerable state without a leader, and this guy just swooped in with the garbage.
You know, Siobhan, I'm curious, and I know we're going to get to this and talking about the amazing documentarian, Catherine on this? We'll get to her. But what I'm really curious at the very onset of this, what really struck me, and I'm curious what you think it was, because from my take, it looked like when Samuel came in, he targeted one of the guys first, one of the higher ups. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like he did something that solved some sort of life crisis for him, which is what you do when you're recruiting, aspire recruiting anyone. You bring in resources that are going to solve some critical life challenge. And then when you have the behaviors of trust, you might have a relationship kind of thing. But what do you think it was that he solved or was able to make this attachment, to have this loyalty to this one of these elders, we'll just call them elders sort of point mm-hmm, of this, mm-hmm. early on that enabled him to kind of weave his way to get this guy to eventually give up his underage daughters?
His daughters, yeah. Yeah, I would love to know the conversations that they had, because we really didn't get into that aspect of it, which leaves us curious. But definitely he could tune in on what people needed to hear. And I believe Warren Jeffs had told them all, you can't have sex anymore. You can't have babies anymore.
You can't get married.
Unless you have permission.
Warren was the only one who could perform the marriages. And then once he got arrested, no one was allowed. Because there's a documentary prior to this about Warren Jeffs that goes deeply into that. It's kind of like the part two to it almost. So nobody was getting married in Short Creek for a long time. And then suddenly somebody was married, and they were married to Bateman. And then everybody was kind of like, ooh, I miss Skittles too. Maybe we can do kind of something like this. And then everybody was kind of like, he must be the new prophet.
Right.
The power of that suggestion there was quite amazing. That's what gets me about this guy. And you said it early. It doesn't take someone to be super intelligent to be cunning or manipulative to be effective. I think that's what is shocking to a lot of people. In my mind, I don't know, for those of us who don't practice, you know, active manipulation on large populations of people, which is most of us, I think in my mind, I always think, well, you got to be like, if you're going to do that, you got to like be really smart and really with
right.
it. No, you just have to believe your own shit.
Yeah.
You just have to believe that you are a prophet. And if you just basically play a role, and it's a very simple, stupid role. Like if this guy threw out a YouTube channel, people would be like, what the hell is wrong with him? Like, this is a crazy man. But if you do it to the right people in the right way, and you're kind about it, and you know, at least initially, and you're loving about it, and you speak their language, and the language of basically eternal damnation or salvation, and I happen to be the only one who knows which way to go, you can get a lot of people.
Yeah, I saw echoes of Chad Daybell in, in him.
Yeah,
the 100%. profound narcissism, the manipulation, and to some degree, delusional with, you know, probably he would be diagnosed with a delusional disorder, you know, not really psychotic, but you've got this one set belief, which you're not going to let go of. And he really had no capacity to see himself as the rest of the world would look at this, because he believed he was this terrific. And he believed he, and probably still does, believes he is a prophet, which basically means every word of his out of his mouth is coming from Heavenly Father. And these poor young women were so brainwashed into this, no capacity to think for themselves. It's just,
I start out by blaming the guys on this. You know, so here's a guy that comes into this pre-arranged cult of FDLS with $20 in his pocket because he's a complete failure, just like Chad Daybell was. I mean, Chad Daybell couldn't do anything, so he actually had to resort to the only income he could get was killing people and getting their life insurance policies, right? This guy is exactly the same, and yet it's astounding me that he was able to he can't manipulate his way through life to get more than $20, but he can come in and completely manipulate the first guy who's a successful businessman. Because so here's a guy that was given Bentleys, had all this money, and his flock was 20 to 30 people, 50 at its most. And so this wasn't big, but these were wealthy enough people to give it all to him through this manipulation, yet he couldn't manipulate his own world outside of this. I mean, it's just profound. And like you said, you just look at this guy, you listen to this guy, and he believed his own crap. I mean, right into the Queen of England, doing a music video for her. What the hell?
I love it. And the fact that Christine during the whole thing is like, let's make the
Christine,
music video.
Not Catherine, right?
Let's make it work. And to go along with it, like, okay, like that's some very interesting embedded reporting that we saw.
She was a genius. She was a sheer genius. And we'll talk about her more later, but when it comes to FBI undercover work, I have never seen any, and she wasn't even working on behalf of the FBI at that time. I have never seen anyone more effective at what they needed to do than her. She intuitively knew exactly what to do.
I was just going to say that.
Genius, sheer genius.
She went on instinct, and she really knew how to feed his narcissism. And her husband did the same thing too. Both fed his narcissism. And if you get a narcissist that's not terribly bright and you feed their narcissism in that way, you can manipulate them to really show their true colors.
And that's the way she did it. You know, just coming in saying, I want to do this documentary on you. And just like you, Siobhan, she had reps in this world because she had been abused by this world. So she knew how to communicate. But at the same time, though, typically, people that are high-level manipulators can pick up on people trying to take advantage of them pretty cleanly, you know, like the Samuel guy. Yet she was so good at not giving any leakage whatsoever to tip him off of the fact that she's there to save the girls, 100%. That's her entire mission. And yet, that compassion, that empathy towards them was extremely real and present and in the moment. Yet she was able to look exactly the same to him. That's what blew my mind. That's where her genius was. Pure genius. What a human being.
She really did that heart-to-heart connection. They could feel that she cared about them, and she cared about the babies. She cared about the all the women. And people who are deprived, and these folks were certainly deprived in so many ways, they're drawn to that. Yeah. And you don't ever win them over by coming in and criticizing their beliefs.
Right.
But you come in with making that heart connection. And she did it.
Yeah, she really did.
When you have high-level manipulators like this, or when you have high-level manipulators, ones that are able to manipulate people, knowing that they're manipulating people, knowing that if I pull this lever here, I'm going to get this result and this sort of complicity with people. I mean, for example, Bateman made the followers confess their sins publicly. I mean, this is something that a lot of cults do. Scientology does yes. it through, through the, what is it called? Where you hold in the little cans, basically, and then you confess your things, and then they write it all down, and they use it against you if you ever try to like go against them. I mean, so many be like, confess your sins to me, confess your sins to this human being, and I shall supposedly just, you know, it's supposed to be your respite, your way of letting it out, and then this other person hears them, and then you're forgiven. It should never then be used over you like a lever, but if you're going to be manipulative, you use it like a lever and hold it over people. And this is one of the things that Bateman did to his followers. There's ones that are doing that with intent, knowing if I get this information, I can use it over them. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if Bateman is one of those, or if in so many of these cases, they're not looking at that as a manipulation lever. It's just how things function. It's just, this is the information I have. This is what happens. I am the leader. I'm the one in control. I am hearing from God. And this is just how things function. They're not looking at it as manipulation. Do you think Bateman looked at any of this as manipulation? Do you think Bateman's just believing his own thing and people are flocking to him because they want to believe in something and nobody is literally sitting here in the corner conniving going, how am I going to control these people? It just works when everybody believes the same delusion and people subscribe to a mentally ill person.
Mm-hmm. I think he did, and this was probably his Machiavellian instincts, right? How do I maneuver here mm-hmm. and get power? Because he wanted to keep his thumb on everything. And by getting people to confess their failings, their, you know, again, their vulnerable areas, it gave him a sense of power mm-hmm. because he saw himself in this godlike position. And, you know, it put him one above them. And certainly if someone had tried to break off, I don't doubt that he would have used what he knew about them to control them. So yeah. Another part of coercive control.
Mm-hmm. It definitely, as time went on through the special, as the years progressed, it looked as though he truly believed the crap coming out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think he actually believed it coming out of his mouth when he went in, or was that a progression from, hey, maybe I can try this, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, I am this?
It would be good to know and ask him, at what point did you become aware that you were a prophet? And it was probably at some point he had woke up with an epiphany, hey, I can do this, and started testing it out. And then it gradually it reinforced him because he was pulling it off. But yeah, when he had them, this video that he wanted taken of him out riding the motorcycle. And as they said, he wasn't a very good motorcycle rider, but I want to see myself on the motorcycle. I want music videos of me. Here's where Queen Elizabeth is going to sit after, you know, she's my next wife. I mean, no intelligent person, they would realize when they're taking it too far and they're getting bizarre out there. And yeah, I think that says a lot about his mental state.
I mean, how does someone like that, I'm sorry, Tony, how does someone like that, that sees Warren Jeffs behind bars for taking advantage of all these underage wives he had, think it's actually a great idea to repeat it again and not get caught?
Mm-hmm. Did not learn from lessons. Clearly,
no.
This is a guy who did not connect the dots well, and this grandiosity that he displayed was so profound, he thought he was untouchable.
But there is a moment in the doc where Christine says, let's take some photos of you with the young girls. And he has enough sense to say, oh, that's how they took Warren Jeffstein. We better
exactly.
not do that.
Yeah.
So I mean, that I found striking. That made me go, oh, he is aware of what's going on. Because if he was so delusionally aware and he thought, you know, God's master plan is at work right now and God's going to protect us from everything, I don't think you'd be saying, well, that's how they took Warren Jeffstein. I think you'd be like, of course, this is what we want to share this with the world. But at the end, is this a prime example of how narcissism wins every time? Not the narcissist. But anyone who practices, it's the narcissism like a disease that takes him down with the videos, the music videos, mm-hmm. the let's have a camera crew follow me around as I do virtually everything Warren Jeffs did. And then that sort of exposure, is this just that where it's like, you don't really need to do much, just let him be in his environment and it will destroy, he will destroy himself in time.
Yeah, yeah. I think he had a little bit of savvy about that because that was something that was very concrete that obviously he stuck with that one, you know, keep the little girls out of the wedding poses here. Mm-hmm. But he sure let a lot of people know that these were his wives going down to 9 years old. And I mean, when it got into the sexual behavior, it was just sickening.
And that's where I am so, again, we keep harping on how amazing Christine was. What do you think she did that was able to engender trust with him to allow him to put everything on video as a documentary after an organization had been taken down by, and as close as it was under Warren Jeffs, and they were still taken down, yet this idiot, thankfully he's an idiot, allowed Christine in a documentary who's not part of the FLDS to come in and video. What do you think what was she doing that could actually feed so heavily into that narcissism without him being skeptical of entrapment?
Compliments, feeding his ego consistently over and over, talking about how much she loved them all. And I think when it came to the women and the children, that was very genuine on her part.
100%.
It certainly felt that way. And I'm not completely sure how much time it took. I think it said in the beginning people were skeptical of her.
Sure.
But over time, they came to believe her. And that was that deep ability she had to role play a very heart-to-heart connection and to truly admire him. There was a lot in the video where she was making very admiring comments of him. And his ego just swelled up.
Yeah, you just feed that ego, and it's amazing. It's amazing how delicious that must taste to some people.
Exactly.
That they're able to just be like, okay, wherever you lead me, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
For someone who is, you know, so powerfully manipulative, how easy one can pull that over their own eyes if you know what levers to pull.
Yeah.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube about this segment. Siobhan's book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Go and check that out. And
please
we'll
get
that
book. It'll serve you or someone you know in your life very, very well. It's a fantastic quick read. Really good.
Your thoughts in the comments on Substack and YouTube, and press subscribe.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spend on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Moto Casino is pure American energy. Born in the USA and with the same 1776 spirit that built this country. Moto, America's social casino, is celebrating that freedom with a 1 million sweeps coin prize giveaway. One lucky American is going to win 1 million sweeps coins. So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spend on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino,